The Southern Cross Constellation flag, better known as the Eureka flag, is an iconic Australian symbol. A navy blue flag with a vertical cross and stars has become not just a flashpoint where conflicting political ideologies meet, but also an intimate personal memory. There are still descendants of Eureka today who have grown up with a personal and cultural connection to the flag and see it very differently. So what happens when a symbol has different meanings? Which ones are right? Which ones are truthful? What is it like to have something with historic and familial ties be used to advance a political cause? And how has one political party drawn the ire of descendants and historians over their use of this flag?
Of course, it's a blue background flag with a white vertical cross.
And at the end of each arm of the cross is a star.
The five stars, the points of the north, south, east, west, and one in the middle. They are eight-pointed stars and joined by the four lines between them.
And it's become a very iconic Australian flag.
Well, I see a quintessentially native to the soil Australian emblem.
It's just an absolutely stunningly beautiful and moving item. All I can do is urge people to see it. If they don't feel moved for it, then I think there's a kind of a hardness in your heart.
It's a really very stark example of people coming together in a group and fighting a government policy that they thought challenged their interests.
Well, when we look at that flag, we think of the lengths to which people were driven in 1854 to huddle together under that flag and vow to fight to defend their rights and liberties.
The Eureka flag. You've heard it described there by four people. A union executive, a historian, a political leader, and a direct descendant. Just in case you're unsure what the Eureka flag is or represents, essentially it was a flag flown by gold diggers who rebelled against the Victorian government in 1854, known as the Eureka Stockade. This happened before the notion of Australia existed, before the trade union movement, and before a right-wing party began to use the iconic symbol as its logo. So what actually happened at Eureka before the flag became a symbol for a litany of political movements? Claire Wright is a historian and wrote The Forgotten Rebels of Eureka.
So, ostensibly the Diggers' Rebellion was against the tax that they all had to pay for being on the goldfields.
The tax wasn't just paid by the diggers, though. Even shopkeepers on the goldfields had to pay it. And as gold became harder to find, diggers grew frustrated, and many couldn't even pay the fines that were charged against them. And it wasn't the only thing that was irritating diggers on the goldfields. If diggers even had a license, they didn't necessarily hold onto it while working.
And many of people didn't carry a license on them, even if they could afford one and did have one, because they were made of paper and these miners were down a hole all day in water and the license would just disintegrate. Now, what would happen if you couldn't show that you had a license on these on-the-spot checks was that you were fined, and if you couldn't pay the fine, you were sent to jail.
The community was living in poverty. And fed up with conditions, an immense act of rebellion took place.
And all of the attempts to inform the government of this was falling on deaf ears. Eventually, the miners decided to burn their licenses as a symbol of protest, and a great gathering of them came together and burnt their licenses.
After this, a flimsy tent was put together to house miners without a license who were worried about being fined again or even attacked by police. And thereafter, a series of events on the early morning of December 3 in 1854 would create history.
So that's effectively what set up this situation whereby the government then, on the morning of Sunday the 3rd of December at about 3 o'clock in the morning, sent its troops down to this stockade and started firing on the troops. There's some controversy as to who fired first. But in any case, it was very quickly overrun and the many, many people lost their lives. The official figures will never be known, at least 30, but possibly many more, including four miners. It was all over in about 15 minutes. And that is the event that we've come to know as the Eureka Stockade.
So that's the story of Eureka, but the main surviving legacy of it isn't any individual, but rather a flag, the one described earlier. So this surviving symbol, what does it mean to those who actually survived, the people who fought and died on the goldfields of Ballarat?
My great-grandfather on my father's side, Patrick Howard, was a miner. He arrived in Ballarat, we think around August of 1854.
Eric Howard is the great-grandson of Patrick Howard, the man thought to have come up with the design of the Eureka flag. Eric's now the president of Eureka's Children, an organisation made up predominantly of descendants from the Eureka Stockade, and clearly stated where he stood on the use of the flag for political movements.
We don't appreciate it being appropriated by special interest groups. The unions, on one hand, have long colonised the flag. There's far-right groups that have applied to have the flag as their logo. That saddens us a lot.
What angers Eric particularly is the Australian Electoral Commission's decision to allow right-wing group the Australia First Party to use it as their logo.
The thing that saddens us most there is that these are a registered political party. Australia First has applied to use the flag as their logo. And at this stage, they've been given permission. There's an appeal pending. We just don't agree that the flag should be associated with any political party, particularly when it's going to be approved by the Australian Electoral Commission.
For Eric, he understands the flag has public meaning, and he'd prefer it stay that way. But his frustration is that the body overseeing this is risking confusing what the Australia First Party stand for and how the Eureka flag may or may not represent that.
Well, I'd say to Jim, whatever your creed is, you go for your life. I'm not going to give you oxygen by commenting on it, but I'd simply say this, find your own symbol. Don't pinch a symbol that belongs to honest, hard-working, enterprising Australians who worked their guts out to try and make a living in this country. Came here, took enormous risks to go to the goldfields and try and build a future, and did. And it just seems incongruous to me that somebody would grab that symbol and use it for a political party, whether it's right or left. I don't accept that. I think it's wrong. But I can't blame him for trying to do it. What I can't understand is how the authorities allow it to happen. My reading of the legislation would suggest that it shouldn't have happened, that their use of the flag could confuse the public between them and us and others who are using it. The Electoral Commission didn't see it that way. I felt the Electoral Commission were bitterly disappointed with their decision-making process.
Power in a factory, power in the lands.
Rita Malia, and I'm the New South Wales President of the Construction Division of the Construction, Forestry and Mining and Energy Union in New South Wales.
Rita Malia is president of the New South Wales branch of one of the largest unions in Australia and sees Eureka and the flag that survives it as a reminder of the collective strength of workers.
As a trade unionist, I think it just really symbolises those feelings of solidarity, of collective action. I think one thing that we've seen in more modern times in Australia is the breaking down of an understanding of how powerful a collection of people coming together and fighting for something that they believe in is. So I think when we use that flag and that symbol, it's to remind people that coming together in a group, collectively, standing up for rights, and that sense of solidarity is really what the flag represents, and it's a reminder of that.
The CFMEU's use of the flag has recently drawn the ire of the federal government, who want to regulate what symbols can and can't be visible on work sites. And you guessed it, the Eureka flag is one of those symbols.
And they have a procurement policy that now says that if certain union-related symbolism is used on site, such as stickers or flags, including the iconic Eureka flag, which is what they name it as in their document, that contractors could risk losing their right to tender for Commonwealth government work.
Rita was slightly open to the idea of rethinking the use of the flag if a formal request was put to the union.
Well, we've got a consultative process within the union, and I suppose if we did get a representation from a group of people that thought we were misusing that symbol, of course we'd have to respect and take that on board and consult amongst our membership and see where we go.
Would that mean even considering no longer using the flag at public rallies or even on construction sites?
I wouldn't want to second guess our membership on that. It'd be something that the members would decide, but if a proper request was made, and we would have to think about it, I would say.
As Rita said, it would be the members who would vote on the matter, Which, given the decades it's been used for, it's unlikely that the unions will stop using the flag anytime soon, whether from pressure from the government or descendants. Finally, we have the newest group to use it officially, the Australia First Party. In late 2016, the party successfully registered the Eureka flag as its logo, despite protests. Dr. Jim Salem is the president of Australia First, and while he respects Eric Howard's views on the use of the flag, he also sees the need to use Eureka as a point of battle in what he describes as culture wars.
What's actually being said is now must be contextualised to the current cultural wars, which is there is no such thing as Australia and Australians, and if there is, it cannot in any way be conceived in the European style. Every aspect of Australian history is multicultural, every event is multicultural, our wars are multicultural, you are deluded. If that is so, then the men who saw our country born and who upheld it and died in blood must have been acting under some terrible delusion. I think Ms. Wright should be sent to a gulag to, you know, contemplate the errors of her ways. Silly person.
The comments about wanting to use a gulag are a stark break in trend from what other groups have said of Australia First. Exploring this debate, I really got the sense that Jim Salem viewed Eureka as a piece of cultural history under attack from other groups, and yet the response he's calling for is extreme. But a lot of his broader political arguments aren't to do with that kind of culture war. It's about one with China, a superpower which he alleges is a great threat to Western democracy.
Amongst all nationalities, you'll always find a person, I believe, of goodwill who'll see the point and see what's coming and go the other way. Unfortunately, this is a matter, I think, that's gone well beyond individuals. It's now a matter of collectivities.
It's always dangerous to make sweeping conclusions about people from one country. And while Jim acknowledged there were some people of good character, he still went on to make such generalizations. And while there is so much disagreement over what the flag represents, what is clear is that it has ended up meaning so many things to so many people, as is the case with public symbols. Perhaps it's better to finish with this final thought. Claire Wright, a qualified and published historian, offered this.
Yeah, well, the Eureka legend and the Eureka flag have always been used in the service of different agendas. And they've been manipulated in order to be for the story to fit the modern political purpose. But I don't think there has ever been an outright fabrication in the way that the Australia First movement has used it. I can't see another instance where they have been so far off the historical mark. But the Eureka flag itself definitely was designed, made and flown with the idea of creating a new Australia that was inclusive of many people from many countries, speaking many languages, but all fighting for the same thing, which was a sense of justice.
I'm Miles Holbrook-Walk, and you are listening to Razor's Edge on 2SER 107.3.